And good morning, everybody. On 881, it's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall, and it is the first Friday of the month. That means it's time for our monthly Maryland Morning Movie Mayhem. Jed Dietz from the Maryland Film Festival joins us. Hello, sir. Good to see you.
Good morning.
So Anne Hornaday usually joins us, but this morning she is en route from Venice to Toronto, making the film festival circuit. So we will get a catch-up from her about that when she returns next month. And let's talk about the festivals a little bit in a second. But the first, let's talk about what has been widely reported for these past few days, that the movies have had their worst summer financially since 1997. 15% decline from the same summer period last year. What's going on? I mean, there's still plenty of people making movies, but the movies they're making don't seem to be catching on.
Well, I mean, August was a record up. So, I mean, it sort of depends on which slice of the summer you look at. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the age-old rule. The movies that come out that audiences want to see are big hit movies. We've Guardians of the Galaxy, which has been a big surprise. Do really well, and the ones that people don't want to see so much, even though you spend a whole lot of money making them and marketing them, you can't force people in the theaters.
You know, and the thing is, you and I both know authors, sometimes novelists, sometimes, you know, nonfiction writers who have books that are optioned, and sometimes they languish for years, sometimes decades before they're made. So it sounds like people are making these movies very carefully. The studios are picking very carefully what they want to make. And as you say, they're spending a ton of money marketing them, hiring big stars in a lot of cases. And some of them are just flopping the minute they're out of the gate.
Yeah. I mean, it's an art form, right? You can't really predict. If they could, they would do it. They would just make hits because that's what they want to do. And they want to make good movies too. That's really the key to it. But it's just hard to predict, and it's an art form, and when you set it in motion, you know, you don't quite know where you're going to end up. The thing that's changed dramatically is the studios not too long ago were making a variety of movies from a cost basis. Some were more expensive by a lot than others. That's really stopped now. They're really focusing very much on these great big tentpole movies, so the risks are very high. Mm-hmm. So when you have a little dip, which is sort of what this summer has been, we'll see where the year ends up. It's scary because you got hundreds of millions of dollars on the line. And it's the other thing to notice is this globalization issue, which has saved movies like Transformers, which has done very well in China. The problem is in China, you don't get as much the studio. Doesn't get as much of the gross box office as they do here. And there's no aftermarket. There's no DVD. There's no on-demand, which are huge revenue streams in the United States.
Right.
So still the North American performance is really what drives everything.
Yeah, and the take for the studios, according to the New York Times, for example, is half in China as it is in North America. And North America is still the biggest movie market in the world.
I mean, yep, by far.
There's a lot of people in China, a lot of people in India, and they see a lot of movies, but we're still, this continent's still the biggest market. So it's interesting. And does the fact that it's the summer have anything to do with it? In other words, the summer seems to be the time when it's blockbuster after blockbuster. I mean, there's Guardians of the Galaxy, we've got Ninja Turtles, we've got Let's Be Cops, we've got, these sort of, either big funny movies or big blow-up movies where lots of stuff blows up. That's what I mean. is it because they release that kind of stuff in the summer?
That's the traditional summer pattern. It really started with Jaws way back. And the idea is that everybody's out of school, so you extend, movie going is really a Friday, Saturday, Sunday activity. And because school's out, it extends throughout the week. And that's true in the summer. So the movies tend to be geared toward, high school kids who, mm-hmm. So that gets blow up movies, But what's been interesting is people are now counter programming. Two of the big surprises of the summer are Boyhood, a longish, wonderful art movie.
Mm-hmm. Richard Linklater.
Yeah.
A movie that took him 12 years to make. They follow this kid who was a non-actor. I mean, they hired him when he was six, and then it finishes when he goes to college, and it's sort of done in real time. I mean, they filmed, I guess, a couple of weeks every year for 12 years.
Yeah, with all those actors, Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette committing to that kind of a schedule, too. I mean, another surprise of the summer is Chef, which is this little movie that Jon Favreau couldn't get anybody to finance. He sort of hustled around and got friends in the movie. Scarlett Johansson has a small role. Dustin Hoffman has a small role. But it's mostly a small story about the chef in a food truck. And it has come back to the Charles a couple times. I mean, it's been re-released. I mean, it's done over $30 million, which a number would not excite a studio, but it had a very low cost.
So right.
People
right.
were
so
very excited.
So the profit on that movie is still going to be much bigger than, say, this Tom Cruise movie, which, you know, they spent a lot of money making and didn't make so much back.
Yeah, exactly.
So Anne, we mentioned, is, you know, going from the Venice Film Festival to the Toronto Film Festival. Right. This is the period where these film festivals start happening. I guess, is this all a warm-up for Oscars and awards and stuff? Yeah. Are people releasing movies now in these festivals to try to get noticed for the awards after the first of the year?
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. And the sort of big group in the fall, and there are a few others, but the big ones that matter a lot are Telluride, Venice, Toronto, and then the New York Film Festival, which is coming up. And, you know, we're seeing already titles that are coming out. Jon Stewart made a movie that is getting a good deal of attention. There's a doc called Red Army that is getting a tremendous amount of attention. Foxcatcher, the new Reese Witherspoon movie called Wild. I mean, these are all going through this sort of festival circuit. And as you watch the circuit develop, you see moments in the film community. You see moments of tremendous excitement, some of it in anticipation. And then as the dust settles, then you see which ones really take off. But this is the world out of which The Butler came, and 12 Years a Slave, and these were small movies, art films that people were not sure would be marketable. And through this festival circuit, they found that they could market them.
So do these festivals function in the same way that Sundance does? For example, you go to Sundance every year.
Yeah.
Those movies get distribution deals while they're screened at Sundance. Are people looking for distribution deals at these festivals now, Toronto and New York, or are those deals already in place? They're just trying to get some buzz about them.
Most of these deals are already in place. And I would also quickly say these are not big studio movies. I mean, they might be affiliated with a smaller distributor who's attached to a studio. But these are typically art films, or what are thought of as art films. And everything's an art film until it's not. You know, once it comes out and does a lot of box office, it's not an art film anymore. But these are movies. Silver Linings Playbook came through this circuit. You know, it's people hoping to get enough notice in this. So it's a little different than Sundance, which is really many of those Sundance movies disappear. I mean, if you went back and analyzed Sundance over a few years, most of the titles at Sundance, so you a few would jump out at you that became hits, but most of what's there really go by the wayside. That's also true in Toronto because it's such a big festival. It's much bigger than Sundance. They sell 400,000 tickets, so it's a great big festival.
Yeah.
But it's not so. It's much more about positioning into the award season. These are films that are coming out pretty quickly, many of them, and hoping that the critical notice that'll come from the festival world will get them into the award world and get another bump.
Yeah, what a delicate science that is to figure out when to release your movie, when to, you know, unleash it on the world. I mean, and we remember these ones that are breakout hits. I mean, I think of Beasts of the Southern Wild with our friend Lucy Alibar, you know, her movie. I mean, she got sort of discovered at Sundance and then, you know, went on to Cannes and was, you know, picked up by Fox to distribute and became this, you know, great award-winning movie.
Yeah.
But so many of them don't. So many of them don't make it.
Yeah.
Jed Dietz is with me this morning. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Maryland Morning. It's our Maryland Morning Movie Mayhem. So let's talk about, actually, before we talk about a few specific movies, speaking of festivals, there's a festival, I guess, begins today, celebrating the work of John Waters, who's on the front page of the New York Times, all the news that's fit to print, very morning.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a, it's a major tribute to this great artist. I mean, I was going to say filmmaker, but he's, you know, his art goes beyond filmmaking. He's written books and is a great visual artist in his own right. Is starting today this career-long tribute to his work. And John, they're going to show all his movies. He's going to host some of those screenings. He's also picking some other movies that have meant a lot to him. And there's a big
piece. Which, of course, he does every year at the Maryland Film Festival and has done since the beginning of the festival.
Yeah. And is on our board and has been just a huge supporter. But this is a fantastic tribute to a guy who's been making movies for over 40 years now.
Yeah, good for him. Well, we hope to talk to John about his book, Carsick. We haven't had him on the show about that.
That's great.
You know, been on some other shows. But we're going to do that closer to Thanksgiving when everybody's traveling. So that's what we're working on.
Perfect.
We thought that would be fun.
But maybe not hitchhiking.
Yeah, don't hitchhike home to mom. You know, buy a ticket. Let's talk about some of these movies that are in theaters now. How about Guardians of the Galaxy? Have you seen this movie?
I have. Yeah, I saw it in 3D, which is, I recommend, is the way to see it. It's totally charming. It's full of blow up and action. It's a Marvel comic book. I knew nothing about it, by the way. I didn't know any of the characters or any of this stuff. It's full of terrific acting. Benicio del Toro has a small role. Bradley Cooper is a voice in this thing. I mean, it's really full of...
He voices a raccoon, I guess.
Yeah.
And Chris Pratt, that guy who's on Amy Poehler's show.
Yeah, Parks and Recreation, is beefed up for this role, and he's sensational. He plays sort of this wise guy, hero character. And it's Zoe Saldana is great. She's green in this movie, but it's really fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear. You know, I'm the kind of person that doesn't tend to go to the movies where cars and buildings blow up and stuff. But some of the Batman movies I thought were terrific, and you know, so maybe this one we'll give a try.
Yeah, this is high on the fun category. It's really good.
How about a movie called Frank? Lenny Abramson. It stars Michael Fassbender, Domhnall Gleeson, and Maggie Gyllenhaal. This got a fairly decent amount of good buzz.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story about based on a true story. This is all fiction, but based on a true story, and it's about a guy who really lives inside a mask. He wears this mask all the time, and you don't quite know why. He's got a band around him. It's a very avant-garde band. They go off to Ireland and try to create an album. They false start several times. It really delves into the creative process, especially an exploratory process. He's clearly the glue of the band, the artistic glue, and in all other ways. Exactly what's going on with this guy with art and who he is as a person and how that dynamic fits with the band and how popular they want to be. All those issues are involved. It's a small movie, but a really good one and beautifully acted. And Michael Fassbender, who plays Frank, you know, is acting with inside this mask. And there's actually a beautiful little scene about how that limits communication, and you've felt it all the way as the audience, and it's beautiful when it comes out in the...
And what a great challenge for an actor where you can't use your face for expression.
But it's an incredible piece of acting.
Yeah, good for him. I want to talk about a documentary that has been out for a while. It's available on demand, and it's about the life of Roger Ebert, the film critic. It's called Life Itself. Steve James made this movie. I know you and Anne, big fans of this.
Yeah, and I'll tell you a very quick story. Steve's been at the festival a bunch. At Death House Door was one of his movies. There's a movie called Steve about a kid he'd helped when he was in college. He did Hoop Dreams. It was his probably most famous film. That was at Sundance and got a lot of play. And Roger Ebert launched that movie because when it went to Sundance, they had gotten a tape. It was way back then. They'd gotten a tape to Ebert when the show was huge. And they got word back from Ebert that, get some people together because we're going to mention it on the show. Well, the show ended with Ebert saying, after all the thumbs up, thumbs down stuff with Siskel, the show ended with Roger Ebert saying the best film in America right now isn't even in a movie theater. It's playing out at Sundance and it's called Hoop Dreams.
Yeah.
And that changed this guy's life. You know, they had no money. And when he introduced this film, Life Itself, about Roger Ebert's last few months at Sundance, he couldn't even finish the introduction. He just burst into tears and sat down. It
Good
was great.
For him. Yeah. Well, that's all the time we have this morning. We shall see you next month. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Good to see you.
Jed Dietz, the director of the Maryland Film Festival. We've got a link to information about what's going on at the festival, and there's always something good going on. Come on over to wipr.org/Maryland Morning. Maryland Morning is an original production of Your Public Radio, WIPR in Baltimore. You can learn more about what you've heard on our show. You can catch something you've missed on our website. Again, come to wipr.org/Maryland Morning. Maryland Morning. The show is produced by Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay. Nathan Sterner directs and engineers and conducts the Maryland Morning Orchestra in the Maryland Morning movie segment theme. We've got production help from Elizabeth Sherwood and Payam Agagasam. Coming up Monday, Sheila looks at ways to control the outbreak of the Ebola virus, and I'll have a conversation with a literary historian about H.L. Mencken and a new book that includes some work that Mencken didn't allow to be published until 25 years after his death. As always, we hope you can join us Monday morning on Maryland Morning. For Sheila Cast, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.